This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to my podcast. I have a very special guest today. He is an author. He works with the persecuted church. He also was an advisor to candidate Donald Trump during his campaign, and he was an advisor on national security and foreign policy. And today he's stuck in France due to COVID-19, and we communicated a little by email, and I said, I want to get you on the podcast. You're not going to believe what he has to say, so stay tuned.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
I'm very excited to have Timmerman on my podcast today. I actually met him at a Trump rally, believe it or not, or actually it was the Trump Club up in St. Johns County, Florida. And he lives in Fernandino Beach, which is a pretty good drive from St. Augustine. And he drove down and I remember meeting him. And now he's in France working on a book. So welcome to you, Tim. Thanks for taking time to be on my podcast.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's great to be with you. My new book is called The Election Heist. It's about how a certain party will try to steal the election of 2020. You can find out about it at kentimmerman.com, which is my website. And that'll take you to the Amazon link where you can pre-order the book. But we were here in France. I was finishing up the final copy edit with my editors in Tennessee and New York. And then the word came down from Le Petit Macron, which is the French president, it's how the French call him, roughly translates to Little Cookie, who told us that the borders were closed, our flights were canceled, and we're going to be here for the duration. So I don't know when I'm going to get back to Florida.
Well, I can't think of a much more beautiful place to be stuck, but your email said that you're under house arrest. And I figured out that it was kind of figurative. But I'm interested in what is happening in France, and I want to be able to compare and contrast it to what we're experiencing here in the United States.
Well, here's the important thing, Steve. On the 17th of March, the president announced here that he was essentially putting the entire nation under house arrest. And I use that term with determination and with great specificity. He said, you may not leave your house under penalty of law unless you have a written attestation, a laissez-passer, just as the Nazi occupation authorities required of French people during World War II. And if you do not have this, first, you'll get a fine. If you are a repeat offender, the fine will go up 10 times. The initial fine was $150. So it will go up 10 times. It'll be $1,500. And if we catch you four times in violation of this house arrest, we'll put you in jail for 6 months and infect all the criminal population. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. And what I find most extraordinary of all is how willing the French people, who are normally pretty feisty and not, you would not consider them sheep, how willing they have been to go along with this and shut down the whole economy just to save the hospital system, because that's what they're being told by the leadership here. That's what they're doing. They're shutting down the economy to save the hospital system.
Well, that's very interesting. And of course, here we're in partial shutdown. The authorities called it shelter in place. Here in Seminole County, Florida, where I live, it isn't as bad as someplace. Our office is still open, believe it or not. We don't deal with the public. And we're doing the social distancing. I still go to Home Depot if I need to pick up something. I wear a mask and I stay away from people. And if I want to pick up carry out dinner, I would say 2/3 of the restaurants are serving carry out dinners. You know, of course, we're trying to be careful. But I can't imagine if they had a house arrest. I mean, yesterday was Easter. We're recording this the day after Easter, of course. There were churches that had drive-in church. I know of one church. It was a very, very small church. I guess they flew under the radar screen, but they had churches normal. I actually know somebody that goes to that church. I need to ask exactly what happened. So why do you think the French are so much more extreme? And also, what is this doing to your economy? Here people are like, complaining that our economy is just being shot. But what you're describing is much, much more severe than we have here in America.
It's 10 times more severe than it is in America. If I had tried to go to church yesterday on Easter, I would have been arrested by the authorities. And any pastor who had tried to meet me or to pray with me would have been arrested as well. We were told this in advance. There were no church services in France at all. The French are saying, well, it's really all for your own good. What they have done, Steve, is instill a state of fear. We are living in a republic of fear in France. People are afraid of each other. When I go to the supermarket, which I am allowed to do once a week, if I have a written laissez-passer, a written pass, people look at each other. I mean, you don't want to sneeze in a supermarket, that's for sure. We're in the south of France. It's not as affected as places like Paris and the eastern part of the country, which have been hit as hard as New York, New York City in the U.S. But still, people look at each other and they keep their distances. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with keeping your distance. What I have a problem with, and what people are starting to talk about now here publicly on both the left and the right, what I have a problem with is the government imposing this legally and fine. They're basically putting the whole country under curfew. I call it house arrest. You can call it curfew. It's a lockdown of the entire country. And if you dare to violate it, you will be eventually you will be arrested. Now, I think people should be responsible. If you have symptoms of an illness, obviously you shouldn't be going out. Obviously, the problem with COVID-19 or the CCP virus, it came from the Communist Chinese Party, is that for the first 10 days, 10 days or so, you could be completely asymptomatic in carrying the virus. So that's the problem that we're facing. And that's one of the things the French have been trying to respond to. But that's not a reason to shut down the economy.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, France is a very prosperous country. What is France going to do if the economy is shut down? And how long do you think it'll be shut down?
They don't even know. I just listened tonight to Little Cookie, the president of France, tell the people that the lockdown is going to last until the 11th of May, another month, and only then be progressively released. Only then will the economy progressively reopen. Restaurants won't be able to open until perhaps July. Restaurants and bars will be shut to July. This is going to completely wreck the tourism industry here, which is a enormous part of the economy. Think Southern Florida. You know, half of France is like Southern Florida. It's a tourist economy, and that is going to be completely wrecked. I mean, I know people who have local restaurants here who have no idea what they're going to do. They don't know how they're going to come out of it, or if they will come out of it at all.
So how are the small business owners and the self-employed coping?
This is the big question, and it is my question as well as to intent. But let me give you an example. So if you are a small business, if you run your own company, you do construction work for people's homes, you can get a permit to go out and continue doing that work. You're not out there on the street. You're not working in public places. You're working at people's homes. They are allowed. That type of small business is allowed to keep operating. But if you have a business that requires you to be in contact with people, you're shut down completely. The government says, we're going to pay for everything. We're going to pay your rent. We're going to pay your mortgage. We're going to pay all of this so you don't have to worry. That's what they have said. That's what people believe. And I think that is the reason there hasn't been a massive revolt, is that people believe that government is going to bail them out. And I have a real big problem with that. They have created a culture here in France for the past 40 years, and I lived here in the 80s and the 90s. They've created a culture here where you depend on government for everything, and their response to the coronavirus has allowed them to reinforce that. So everybody is looking to government for solutions, and instead of looking to each other, to their neighbors, to their local communities, to their states.
Well, I've seen some of that here. And it kind of almost makes a case for socialism in the sense that the government owns everything and kind of decides who gets paid what. I mean, I was in the Soviet Union before it fell, And that's kind of how they did things. And boy, that was a mess. And Russia is a whole lot better off now under capitalism. It's still, you know, not a great country by any means. And you just wonder how this will change things. And, you know, people here have been talking about 9/11 and how life after 9/11 was different. You know, I mean, just anybody who flies on an airplane knows that. And life after COVID-19 is going to be different. How do you think it's, where do you think this is all going to land? I mean, eventually the virus will go away. The bubonic plague even ended at some point. And of course that decimated Europe much, much, much worse than this is. The Spanish flu went away at some point. But what do you think will happen when things sort of get back to normal, or will they?
Well, I think in the United States, we will go back to normal because we still have a cultural a culture of independence. We still believe in our Bill of Rights. We believe in religious freedom. We believe in freedom of movement. We believe in social freedoms as well. The French do not. The Europeans do not. And I think you will see a move here towards globalism, towards supranationalism, perhaps a supranational European state. The French are already talking about finding agreements with other countries in the European Union. They're talking about nationalizing industries. They're talking about giving up their personal freedoms to the government. And I find that very, very disturbing. One potential positive outcome of this, though, Steve, is that you could see a reduction of the reliance on China as a source for goods, for products, for manufacturing, for you know, parts and labor, things that they can make cheaply. It may just be too expensive to make things in China any longer because the Chinese Communist Party continues to try to destroy us, whether it's through biowarfare, and this may be a covert form of biological warfare. It might not have been intentional to begin with, but it certainly has been in the way it's played out, using the WHO as a surrogate for the Chinese Communist Party to cover up the virus for over a month. You know, it could actually backfire against the Chinese, both in Europe and in the United States, where we will bring manufacturing back to our home countries. That would be a very positive outcome.
Well, I know that's going to happen. And, you know, I'm a publisher and we do a certain amount of publishing in China. It's not real, real convenient, but on certain kinds of books, mainly books that are full color, that are for children, where the price has to be very cheap, we've published there. But we have decided that beyond whatever contracts we have on the table, we're not going to publish in China anymore. We will either not do those kinds of books or we'll figure out something else. And I think a lot of people are in the same position I'm in. Plus, during this, I've learned a lot of things I didn't know about China. Like, for example, that the vast majority of our pharmaceuticals come from China. You know, they could just cut off the supply and there we are without, you know, basic medicines that people need to stay alive. And I think that President Trump is going to bring a lot of that back here. Now, let me talk to you a little bit about your book, The Election Heist. I was going to give you a chance to talk about it a little bit on the podcast, because I think it's important and people need to check it out. I certainly am, because in my own book, my new book, which is called Guy Trump in the 2020 Election, I make the case for why Trump must win. And it's basically all the bad things that will happen if the other side gets in. But then I have a chapter right up front in the book on why Trump might lose. And I cite 8 things. And one of them is if the economy crashes. And when I wrote it last fall, or when I finished it last fall, it didn't look to me like anything was going to hurt this booming economy.
That's
little
right.
Did we know. And then, of course, some of the other reasons that I won't go into is just how dishonest the other side is. And, you know, that's basically it, how dishonest they are, how they will steal ballots. There's a new thing called ballot harvesting, where
ballot
they go
harvesting
door to door in some states and collect people's votes. I mean, that's just rife with possibilities for corruption. I mean, even in Florida, down in Broward County, in close elections, you know, when the wrong person won, so to speak, they suddenly found boxes of uncounted ballots in somebody's rental car trunk. Isn't that amazing that they just happened to show up after the polls closed?
Right.
And you know, of course, there's investigations on that. And I hope somebody goes to jail over that because it was just so wrong. But I'm interested in what you think about the election heist and what caused you to write the book.
So Steve, I was the Republican nominee in a congressional election in 2012 in Maryland, Maryland's 8th district. I was a nominee against Chris Van Hollen, who is currently now a senator from the state of Maryland. And we had a lot of problems in that election with defective voting machines. These were electronic machines at the time. I did a great deal of investigation following that, was unsuccessful, obviously, with anything in that particular election, but it got me thinking and got me doing a lot of research. And what I discovered was that our election systems are not secure. And if you go to kentimmerman.com, you just click on the cover of the book, it'll take you to the Amazon page for the book. You could read some of the commentaries of people who've read this manuscript, who've read the book, who've been very disturbed by the book, including one of our congressmen from Florida, John Rutherford, in the 4th District, where I live in Nassau County, and many, many other people, people who are experts in election security. Our election system is penetrable. It is at risk. So what I wanted to do, I wrote a novel, The Election Heist. I call it an entertainment. So it's a fun book to read. It's about an election in Maryland, a congressional election. It starts that way between an incumbent Democrat and a wealthy, Hispanic, young, handsome Republican who starts off to be self-financing as the challenger. And then you find what the Democrat who is losing in the polls will do for power. And the whole story behind this book is how he then contacts the Democrat National Committee, the presidential nominee, because he has a personal connection there. And then he gets sucked into this program, pulled into this program where they're going to steal the election through hacking. And that's what the book is about. And the whole scenario is how they actually hack into the election systems, how these candidates go along with it. And it's a personal story between this Democrat nominee incumbent and his Republican challenger, who, of course, believes that elections are secure. Elections should, be a contest of popularity and of people and of programs. Uh-uh, folks, it's a heist. So that's what the book is all about. And I hope it's a great read. I hope you'll have as much fun reading it as everybody else who's seen the book before which has yet been published.
Well, that's great. And as we wrap this, I want to ask you about COVID-19 and what effect you think it will have on the 2020 election, particularly with the election for president.
Well, I think the one thing that you may see policy-wise is calls from the Democrats and some people not with the Democrats for greater socialized medicine. I don't think that's a smart thing. I don't think it's wise. I don't think it will work in the United States, but I think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see the Medicare for All issue being pumped up and put out there on the media. And the media is certainly going to support it because they support, government control of anything. But that's the biggest thing that I can see right now. Now, there could be more as we come out of the quarantine or the self-imposed quarantines. But I think that Medicare for All and the way that we deal with the health system is going to be the biggest issue that comes out of this.
And how do you think it's going to affect the election in terms of who wins?
Well, I think President Trump's, first of all, his popularity, he's more popular today than he was before the beginning of the pandemic because he's exerted leadership and because he hasn't taken away people's freedoms. He's respected the freedoms of the American people, the sovereignty of the American people, which is not the case of most of the leaders in Europe, Boris Johnson being the great exception of that. So I think the president's going to be reelected with a massive victory margin, unless we see an election heist. And that's why I wrote my new book, was to warn people of the vulnerabilities of our election systems.
Well, we have to be careful. We have to be vigilant. We all have to not be naive and think that everybody is honest, because unfortunately, everyone is not honest. I still do believe that there are honest people in America, but we have to be very, very careful. Here in Florida, you know, we're famous for our hanging chads. Remember that from the 2000 election? And Florida made a lot of changes. Here in Seminole County, we have a system that I think most of the other counties have where we vote with a paper ballot, kind of like you did when you did the SAT test, where there's little circles and you color them in for your answer. And then it's fed into a machine that copies them, you know, electronically, and is able to tally the vote very quickly. However, in Florida, if the election is within 1%, there's an automatic recount. You don't even have to sue for it. And they go back and count the paper ballots one by one by one. Now, I think that's a pretty good system. It's both electronic and it's manual. Do you think that that's vulnerable, or have the Florida officials figured out a system that other states ought to adopt?
It is vulnerable, and it's exactly the scenario that I use in the election heist, because it is vulnerable. And one of the key elections in 2020 is going to be Florida. And those paper ballots, they are not secure. You mentioned the scanners. They're scanned. Anything that is controlled by software is hackable. Get that into your minds. Anything controlled by software can be hacked. And that's where the people who would like to manipulate the results of the elections, that's where they're going to go. Here's something that people don't know. By the way, Steve, it's not 1%. It's a 0.25% for the manual recount. And so it has to be a 0.5%. So it has to be a very, very close election to actually count the paper ballots. What they do first is they count the ballot images. What are the ballot images? They're created by software. That software can be hacked. So if you recount the ballot images, you get exactly the same false result that you got on election night when the tabulators had been hacked. That is what you're going to find out by reading the election heist. It is a frightening scenario. People are not aware of it. I've actually spoken to supervisors of elections about this. They were not aware of these vulnerabilities, and now they are starting. I hope they're going to start to take some protections against it and do precautionary audits of the actual paper ballots. And if you see a difference between the actual paper ballots and what the number that is counted of the images of the ballots, in other words, when they do the so-called audits, that's when you know you've got a problem.
Well, I really appreciate you writing the book, and I'll just encourage my listeners and those who read my newsletter to go on Amazon, as I will, and order this book. And while you're there, go on over and order a copy of God, Trump, the 2020 Election, which is continuing to sell pretty well. I've been surprised because it's in Walmart and Sam's, and they're both open, and we have lots of copies on the shelf. A lot of bookstores, of course, are closed down, but I believe that after this is over, the same issues that were involved in the book and the reason I wrote it, such as, you know, the very different worldview between the left and the right and how serious things will be if Donald Trump is in election, I believe that those are still true. However, I am working even today on a digital book that I'm calling God, Trump, and COVID-19, which deals with the kinds of things that Tim and I have been talking about. And we'll tell you more about that later. I hope to have it out very, very shortly. So with that, I'll wrap up this edition of the Strang Report. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Check out the other podcasts that we have on the Charisma Podcast Network. And be sure to share this with friends. If you think that someone would enjoy this podcast, share it with friends. And let's help Tim sell a lot of books, and in the process, election supervisors, other politicians, perhaps will wake up, and perhaps we can prevent this problem from happening in America. So with that, I'll wrap this up. I'll thank Tim again for being my guest. Thank you for listening to the Strang Report today on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to the Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.